it says Yosisa and Teoseh. So Rashi says Teoseh HaMenoira Me'eleha, emphasizing the passive Teoseh instead of Ta'aseh. Rashi says Lefi Shehoya Moshe Miskasheh Ba Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Hashlich Es Hakika La'ol La'ur V'hi Na'aseis Me'eleha L'kach Loi Nichtav Ta'aseh. When it comes to making the menorah, it seems that he had difficulty imagining how to do it. So Hashem said to him, Hashleich, throw it in to the fire. So the Sifsei Chachamim points out that there seem to be two problems here. Because Chazal tell us that he showed him a menorah shel esh. So once he showed him a menorah shel esh, you buy something, it's a kit, and the instructions are missing. And the big problem is the final picture. What's it supposed to look like? So you ask somebody to forward you, to email you, the instructions and the picture. And once you have the instructions and the picture, you put the kit together yourself. So that's the menorah shel esh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants him to see what it's supposed to look like. Because when you speak about Gevi'im and Kaftorim and Prochim and everything has to be Mikshachas, it's an extremely difficult thing to figure out on your own and to imagine. So he has to give you a picture. So he gave him a picture in a tzura, a menorah shel esh, and he gives him the menorah so that he could see it with his own eyes. But apparently that wasn't enough, because it says Te'aseh, the Asiyah itself happened by itself. So how is that? So he said, Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Hashleich Es HaKikar. What's the kikar? It means the bar of gold. In other words, he didn't even make the slightest effort, apparently, to manufacture it after he saw the esh, menorah, picture. Because Hashem says, take the kikar and throw it into the fire. V'hinasis me'eleha. V'kach chofzuv te'oseh. So noting this stira, apparently, what was the problem? The picture or the asiyah? The Sifsei Chachamim says, barishon and niskashe, v'hereyu shalesh. First he had trouble envisioning it, so he showed him the picture. Yeah. So it says in the pasuk at the end of the menorah, Rashi says, So this Rashi seems to be a steerer to the Rashi before, because here it's about the Re'iyah and there it's the Asiyah. So the Sifsei Chachamim is explaining, as I told you, that he had both problems. That even after he was shown the menorah shel esh b'tzura, he had trouble in the manufacturing of it. So in the end, they threw the kikar into the fire. And that's what it says. And what's Asher Atomar Ebohar? Yeah. So I wanted just to add in this Asher Atom Mor'eh Bahar that there's a remez here. The Chazal tell us two things. First of all, that the menorah represents Torah. Orah Zu Torah, and the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash represents Torah and its koach. Shulchan represents Parnosa, the two poles of responsibility of providing and of working, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashkocha. And Siyata Dishmaya is represented in the Shulchan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides Parnosa, the Maftechus Shal Parnosa, in his hands. And we do Hishtadl. Menoira is Torah. So what about in Torah? So what I wanted to suggest to you is that it's exactly the same as in Parnosa, except that the effort is different. But the Maskanas Hadvarim is exactly the same. What do I mean? That it's only after the Siyata Dishmaya of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that a person has the ability to acquire Torah. Be'em is no different than in Parnosa. Parnosa does not come from our efforts. It comes from HaKadosh Baruch. In life, you can give a person hundreds of rayas to that fact, but the Chazal say so, and that's enough for me. In Torah, it's exactly the same. The Chazal tell us that when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Shamayim Arboim Yoim and Arboim Laila, and Lechem Loyochal and Mayim Loyshosa, he was very much a malach, and he reached the highest madregas that a person could possibly reach in an understanding of Hashem. He was the Adon HaNeviim. And if there is anyone of flesh and blood, a Yulud Isha, as the Malachim called him, that is capable of achieving anything in Torah, it is Moshe Rabbeinu. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives him the Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh, it was niskasha, exactly the lashon that we have here, v'nogeh de menorah, it was impossible for him to learn and contain kol ha-Torah kula, until HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it to him the matzah. That's why the pasuk says, Vayitein el Moshe kechaloso ledaber ito. So the lashon of Chazal is kechaloso, just like a kala is miskashetes b'chav dalet kishutim, so too Moshe Rabbeinu was adorned with the 24 kisvei HaKadosh. The Rav used to say that there's something much deeper than that in these words. What is that? It says, "Vayomer Hashem al Moshe alei elai yahara veheyesham veetna lecha es luchos ha'even v'hatorah v'hamitzvah shekosafti lahorosam." And that means Torah shebichsav and Torah shebaal peh. So when the Ribbono Shel Olam gives him all of this, so the idea is that it's vayitein, it's a maton. So the Rav pointed out that the image of kechaloso is that a kala, when you say hareat mekudeshes li b'tabas zu, how do you know that you can use a tabas? Because tabas is shove kesef ke kesef. How do you know that you can use kesef? And the question is a deep question, because kesef is an acquisition of material things. You don't buy a woman. She's not selling herself to you. The kinyan of kedushin is a mutual relationship kinyan. It's not an acquisition kinyan. It's not one-sided. The maisa is from the chosn to the kala, ki yikach ish isha, but the chalois is mutual. It creates a matzav, not an ownership. But where do we learn the kinyan of kesef from? Everybody knows that. Kicha kicha, misdei Ephron. How do you learn a maisa kinyan from a sada? The answer is, the formality is learned from the sada, not the chalais. In other words, there are certain kinyonim which are extremely logical and reasonable, sort of like acquisitions in miniature. Take, for example, Hagbah, Meshicha. If you take something into your possession, symbolically, it's the same as taking it into your possession for real. So if something belongs to me, I take it from your rishus and I bring it into my barn, and I start feeding the animal and taking care of the animal, because it's mine. When I do a Meshicha, it might be just for a couple of feet. But that Meshicha symbolizes it's coming into my barn, and it's coming out of your barn. In Karka, there are kinyonim, Shtar, Chazaka, and Kesef. Each one has a symbolism. Chazaka is obvious. Noal Godor Paratz is a demonstration of Bailus. Who makes breaches in the wall? And who fixes and repairs the wall or locks the wall, the door to the wall? The answer is the Balabas. By doing this in miniature, even once, over a huge field, it shows that you are now the Balabas, and by demonstrating you are the Balabas, you become the Balabas. That's what a kinyan is. Same thing, Shtar. Shtar's proof of ownership is much more legal. It's much more subtle. But it's the same point. How do I show that I'm the balabas? If I can have Adam in my pocket, and wherever I go, I can show you, I own this field, that gives you the field. So the shtar, as a raya, becomes a shtar kinyan. How does kesef work? If you pay for something, you own it. So that's very nice when you're talking about karka. Or in theory, at least, about metaltlin. Kesef doesn't work by metaltlin because of the problem nisrufuchitecha ba'aliyah. So we want the metaltlin to move, because otherwise the original owner couldn't care less. He already got his money, and he'll let the thing burn to the ground. So we say, no, kesef doesn't work. But in theory, it would work in metaltlin too. Because when you buy something and you pay for it, it's yours. Otherwise, why am I giving you money? So that's the symbolism of paying for something. You don't pay for a wife. Not in our society. Maybe in the some archipelago somewhere in the Samoan Islands, maybe. But here you don't pay for your wife. So what's the pshat in Kenyan Kesef? The Teretz says it's a symbolism thing that borrows an actually irrelevant contractual relationship to something that is very, very different, namely the Kenyan Iser and the Kenyan Chalois of Kedushin. So what you're really borrowing is a Maisa, a Tzura. You're not borrowing its essence, because the essence doesn't fit. So the Rav said that that's why it's compared to Kalosai. Because Torah is also like that. When you give Torah to somebody, the Ribon Shom to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he's human, it's really impossible. It's Arucha Me'eretz Mida Rechava Miniyam. Whatever gift you can give, however you could impart the Torah, it doesn't have the chalais that it's supposed to have until the Ribon Shom grants it to you as a gift. In other words, the kinyan is only a tzurah. It's not the acquisition itself, because the acquisition is memela as a gift from Hashem. Anytime a person learns, he's imitating that moment of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Torah is vast, it's complicated, it has an infinite number of possibilities. Each blot, if you learn it, it's only to be able to learn it better once again. That's why we say Hadron, and that's why we learn Siyum from Hashem Nosam Chochma Lishlomo. So he made a big party, and everybody asks, but that's when he got the Chochma. He didn't even start learning again yet. So why do we make it Legomra Shel Torah? We should make it to the beginning of Torah. The Teretz is because Chochma Shlomo was a tool that now he could see things better than ever before. When we learn and we finish the Masechta, we can see the Masechta better than ever before. That's really all we accomplished. We now have a tool for tomorrow's learning again. And so it is the second time makes it easier for the third, and the third easier for the fourth. It's always a Haskalah. Gomra Shel Torah is a complete tool, which now I can use to open up the next door. Because if I learn a quarter of a Masechta or a half a Masechta, I don't have the tool yet fashioned in my hand. But can anyone say, now I know it? So Reb Chaim Volozhiner came and he said, I learned Gan Seder Moed, he means Bavli, Rishalmi, or Gemara Rashi, tells us everything, whatever he needed to know. But the Rambam's and the Ravid's thrown it, and he says, I still don't know it al Burya. How many times? I don't know, 12 times, 15 times, I don't know. But he learned it many, many times. Many times, Be'iyun Gadol, and a genius to boot. So they say that the Vilna Gaon started to laugh, to mock him. What? You expect that 15 times and you'll know Seder Moed? So he asked the Rebbe, and how many times? Thinking that maybe there is a number. Ein Adam Ishan Apirko Me'apamim L'me'apamim V'achas. Maybe that's the number. The Gaon refused to give him a number. Instead, he used a melitza, a figure of speech, that's borrowed from the halacha of Einus Umefata. Loi Sihi El Isha, it says, Lo Yuchal Shalcha Kol Yomav. He'll never be able to send her away. So Chazal say, what happens if he does divorce her? Then that halacha of Lo Sihi El Isha, Lo Yuchal Shalcha B'chol Yomav, demands that he should remarry her right away. Lo Yuchal Shalcha Kol Yomav Ba'amod V'hachazer Koi. All his life, he is now under the responsibility of Amod, get up, V'hachazer, take her back. Because Lo Sihi El Isha compels him, even if he divorced her, to take her back again. So he used that expression, it's only a melitza the way he used it. The Kol Yomav Ba'amod V'hachazer, all your life you have to chazer and chazer and chazer and chazer. There's no such thing. So you know, you all know that the Vilna Gaon was inspiring people to learn at least one Masechta and know it well, to such an extent that your mamish know it by heart. You know, in case this and ever the lights go out, you'll be able to chazer besechta, you won't be bottled from learning Torah. So somebody took his words very seriously and he decided to learn a mesechta, I guess, Baba Kama, Baba Mitzvah, it's a little bit too overwhelming, so he decided to learn Masechta Sukkah. And he chazered it over many times, and he desired to test himself by the Gra and to prove that he really knew it, and he came with great confidence. And the Vilna Gaon asked him, how many times the Bayi Varava Machlekes in the Gemara? How many times Rabbi Yochanan Shlokish mentioned in the Masechta? And so on and so forth. And of course, he was totally stymied. He didn't learn that way, and he never expected to be asked that kind of question. And then he asked him, how many sukkahs are mentioned in the Mishnayos that are kosher, and how many sukkahs are mentioned that are posel? And he showed him the exact number of Machlekes in between Rabbi Yochanan Shlokish and between Abai and Rava, and exactly where they were. And then he showed him that the minion of sukkahs psulos is gematria, sukkah without the Vav, and the minion of ksheros is with the Vav. I mean, it was just, and it blew his mind completely. And he realized that he didn't even begin to know the Masechta. And it's an amazing thing. What is knowledge? Knowledge depends what you mean by knowing. So if the Torah is so spectacularly wide and complicated and demanding, so Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't able to contain it in 40 days, and we couldn't contain it in 4,000 years. As long as we lived forever, we wouldn't be able to contain it. So the image is the menorah, because first HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, make a menorah. And he says, but I can't even picture it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, I'll help you with that also. I'll give you the picture. So he looks at the picture. But then there's a problem. You know what the problem is? You have a kikar, and you have to have it miksha. So now the question is, okay, I can't manage to make a miksha out of this kikar. Now, Torah is very interesting also. Torah is, in its location, very difficult. Wherever you are, you can get a very complicated and demanding sugya. You don't know what to do with it. And then how does it connect to the rest of, how do you manage Kol HaTorah Kula? Because it's all Chativa Achas. Anim b'makam echad, Ashirim b'makam acher. So then you have to make Kol HaTorah Kula your domain, just to understand any particular sugi. So how can you do that? That's a separate question. In both there's a tremendous Siyata D'Shmaya. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you the picture here, and he gives you the capacity to learn and learn and learn, and even if in the end you can't contain it, he gives it to you b'matam. But that is providing one thing, niskasha. Lechem lo yochal umayim lo yishosa. In other words, Hashem says like this. And here is the, before I even explain what Hashem says, here is the critical difference between the two kinds of ishtadlus. In mamonos, and ishtadlus in panosa, in other words, and ishtadlus in learning, in Torah, and in Yiras Shamayim in general. The ishtadlus of mamonos is a facade. The ishtadlus of Torah is a chelik of the acquisition of Torah. It's just step one only. That's the difference. In other words, the Hishtadlus in Torah is not a facade. It's not a mirage. It's not so that it shouldn't be appearing like a nace, or because the curse says, Bezeyas Hefecha Tochalech. It's because we've gone as far as we can go. And if that is achieved, that we've gone as far as we can go, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, but that's not enough. So what's going to be? So the Teretz says, I'll give you the rest of the matan. So in Mominus, in Parnos, and Ishtadlus, and by the way, as I point out, that this is a total footnote, which has nothing to do with what I'm saying, but I don't want ever that anything that I say in this regard should be misconstrued. When a person has his own opportunities to do his own efforts, where it doesn't involve commitments, promises, contracts, and so on, you could say the Ishtadlus is a mask, and the Ishtadlus, the minimum, is the best. That has nothing to do with working for somebody else. Because the Rambam, as I've mentioned dozens of times, at the end of Hilchos Chirus, it's easy to find. It's much harder to do than to find, believe me. The Rambam says that you can't waste a minute of the boss's time. And you cannot do anything less than your absolute best, your absolute utmost. If the contract says that you work from 9 to 5, and you put in work as a computer programmer, your work has to be from 9 to 5, and the programming has to be the best you can possibly make it. It's a two separate inyan. Now here, imagine a person's a big tzaddik, in quotation marks, and he says, since his shtadlus is only a mirage and a facade, and it's Hashem who's giving me my parnasa, so it's nothing wrong if I don't put in such an effort, and lehefech, maybe putting in such an effort is maybe even osur. Nothing could be further from the truth, and I want you to know that anybody that thinks that way is a gazlan. There's no other word to use. He's just a fraudulent person. And he's a gazlan. So the image of sitting back and relaxing and saying, Baruch Shalom, it's up to you anyhow, don't make that mistake of thinking that that's how a worker for others should think. Or if somebody signed a contract with somebody to provide him services or provide him a product and he's expecting the best possible product, you have to produce that. You can't skimp and say, I'd rather sit and learn, or I'd rather daven a longer Shemona Esrei, and whatever you get is good. And anyhow, my parnosa is secure. Hashem will take care of it. Nothing could be further from the truth. Nothing could be further from the Torah agenda. Anybody who thinks that way is not thinking Jewish. It's as simple as that. To think Jewish is to be totally and absolutely committed to your boss, if that's what the contract requires. If the contract says you have 3 hours out of from 9 to 5 to watch the internet and to play around, kol hakavod, then you can do it. You know. So then, if you take that time out and you learn, it's wonderful. But no contract says that. Most contracts don't say 9 to 5. They say, I want your neshama. I don't want just your day. I want your night. I don't want your night. I want 365 days a year. I want your summer. And then in the end, I want your neshama too. So that is something that you have to think about. Do you want to sign up for that? But once you do, nobody forced you. So if that's the deal, that's the deal. It's very important for a person to be aware of that. Cannot second guess his responsibilities and redefine it unilaterally. For a redefinition of responsibilities, you need the mutual consent of the person who hired you as well as yourself. So this is not a loophole or a heter of any kind. But if lu yitzuya, you can, you're on your own, so then the hishtadlus aspect, in theory at least, is minimal, because Hashem is taking care of you. However, in Ruchnius, it's the exact opposite, because the hishtadlus is not the superficial facade for something that really Hashem does 100%. It's a shutfus with Hashem. Your hishtadlus and Hashem's final makeh bepatish, giving it to you b'matana. So why is it b'matana? because if you learn and you can't achieve it on your own, so you really haven't gotten it yet at all. Imagine, you know, the joke that I always tell over about the person who was an Am Haaretz, but he got the best boy in the yeshiva, and then he asked him, "What mestechta are you learning, my son-in-law, my dear son-in-law?" And he says, "Baba Kama," and then he started screaming like a banshee, you know, "Mekachtos, Mekachtos," because his son-in-law, at the age of 25, the best boy in the yeshiva, was learning exactly the same thing that his 8-year-old was learning, Baba Kama. So that's the point. You're learning Baba Kama, you can't finish Baba Kama, because the 8-year-old's Baba Kama is not a Baba Kama altogether, compared to the 25-year-old. But the 25-year-old is nothing compared to Moshe Rabbeinu, obviously. There's many stages in between that it's not compared to. And that, even itself, was not able to be accomplished except with Matana that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him. So it's a shutfus. But what is the shutfus dependent upon? That's what I'm saying. So the shutfus is dependent upon your input to the maximum. That's where it's diametrically opposite the theoretical hishtadlus. Again, we're not talking about contracts and breach of contracts here. But the theoretical hishtadlus in Parnosa is the exact opposite of the hishtadlus in Torah. The hishtadlus in Torah demands a kiheim chayenu baruch yameinu orientation. So if anybody wants to know what that level is, all he has to do is look at the Rambam in Perek Gimel of Hilchos Talmud Torah. He doesn't need any other sefer or any other source. The Rambam in the third Perek says it black on white. The Rambam says that your hashkofa has to be a certain kind of hashkofa. But then the Rambam also says, let's call that the x-axis, the f of x. But then the Rambam says that besides the overarching hashkofa, which kind of determines your day and your year and your life, there is the y-axis. The Torah is a function of f of y. What is that? Your immediate bishas maisa approach to the day, to the hour, to the moment is very, very different. You see, because a lot of people are capable of big ideas and they actually believe in them. But the Yetzer Hara has trouble overcoming them on that level, because they really understand the emes of what they believe in, and they subscribe to it. And they may put their money where their mouth is, they may raise their children that way, but for themselves, they can't handle it. When it comes Lamaisa, the Yetzer Hara has them by the throat. They find it difficult when they sit down and open up the Gemara. It doesn't go. You believe that Torah is the best Tzchaira? Yes. You believe that Torah is determining the destiny of the universe? Im lo bisi yom v'layla chukos shamayim v'aretz lo samti? Yes. You believe that you have a role to play in that? He starts to cry. He says, yes. So what's the problem? I can't. I don't enjoy it. I don't like it. I don't want it. I'd rather watch the play in the ball game. I'd rather watch the ball game. I'd rather do my homework. I have to do my homework. I mean, whatever it is, it makes no difference. I need to relax. There's 10,000 ways of saying no. There's only one way of saying yes, and that's to sit and to learn. So the Rambam, if you look closely at the Rambam, you'll see that the Rambam's agenda, philosophy, orientation is expressed. But at the same time, the Rambam is as precise as he could possibly be about the here and now. Because philosophy goes only so far. And the test of the philosophy is the Lamaisa, of course. Because otherwise, at the very least, even if the person's not a hypocrite, but he's a contradiction. No one can be besimcha when he lives the life of contradictions. Not possible. And that's why even though Pikudei Hashem Yisharim San Chelev and Torah brings simcha, but it's impossible to be sameach if you're a fraudulent person, whether in principle, which is altogether a disaster, and as a hypocrite, a man who's full of baloney. He doesn't really believe in all the things that he mouths. But what if he does, but he just doesn't do it? That's not far behind in terms of simcha and atzmus, because maybe it brings even more atzmus. When you're not cynical and you're sincere, but you just can't do it, it brings a person to a great deal of depression and dismay. But this is how the Rambam organizes his Perek Gimel. And it's crystal clear, I'm not adding anything at all. The Rambam says as follows. Mishin aso libo l'kayim mitzvah zukaroi, Perek Gimel halocha vav, afilchus tamat Torah, ulios muhtar bekeser haTorah, lo yasiach daito l'dvorim acherim, v'lo yosim alibo, Shiikna Torah ima osher v'hakovot ka'achas, kachi dakar shol Torah, pas ba'melach tochal, mayim besurat tishte, aloritz tishon, chayitzar tichya, etc., etc. Now the Rambam says, Shema toma atcha kabitz momon, echzor v'ekra, atcha ekne mashinit sorich, v'epona me'asokai, v'echzor v'ekra, imtala machshova zu alibcha. You see, we're talking about hashkofas. attitudes, feel. This is how he should think. This is darka. When you speak about a derech, you're talking about an overarching orientation. That's my derech. Like you have a derech in learning. This one learns this way, this one learns that way. Not just Baba Kama, not just Menachem. He learns every mesechta with that derech. Derech is a universal. So kachi darka shel Torah, hasba melech tochal. That's the orientation. Now the Rambam says, a little bit later, in divrei Torah miskayim, b'mishamar pa'atzmo aleihem, v'lo be'elu shalomdim mitoch idun u'mitoch achilu shesia, yeah? Elo b'misha meimis atzmo aleihem, u'mitzayar gufo tomid, v'lo yitein sheino le'enov u'la'af apov tenuma. And then the Rambam said, afalpi, in the very next halach, afalpi she'mitzvah l'umel b'yom u'valaylo, eino adam lo med rov chochmoso elo b'alaylo. The fiko komisha yitzeliskos b'keser ha'toyri yizoher b'chol le'losov. You should be careful about every night. V'al ya'abid afilu echot mehem, b'sheino v'achilo v'ushasiyo v'sicho v'kayotze b'hem. Elo b'talmud Torah v'divrei chochma. So, b'kitzer, you see clearly that the Rambam divided his points between the hashkafas olam and the day-to-day, here and now, of the moment-to-moment of learning of Torah. Because you can have that hashkafa, and here and there, some nights could go. They get frittered away. So, what do you see from all of this? That the hishtadlus of the menorah, the make of that kikar, which has to have gevi'im and kaftorim and prochim, but it's all miksha achad. It's impossible. So he threw it into the fire. But when he threw it into the fire, it was his asiyah, the maximum of his asiyah. He tries for 40 days and 40 nights with the maximum that is humanly possible. And only then, when he discovers that he doesn't have it, and that should lead a person to tremendous tsar, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what? I'm going to give it to you. And that's why any great Talmud Chacham, if you ask him, if today's Talmid Chachamim, 100 years ago, 500 years ago, maybe different madregas, different capacities, but they all have the same sense that they hit a block, they hit a mechitza shel barzel, and they're full of consternation and confusion, and all of a sudden, from nowhere, the ha'ara comes. That eureka of a ben Torah is always a matana from the... It just falls into your head. But it only falls into your head. I remember, I tell this over a lot, there were many such episodes, but this is a very typical example. The Rav used to say that the minute that the Talmidim closed the Gemara, that's they say goodbye to their Torah, to that Shir, to that Iyun, until they come to the Seder the next morning. He says he can't be like that. When he has an issue or a problem, it bothers him forever until it's resolved. Until he has a full understanding, he doesn't eat, he doesn't sleep, and if he does, he's still eating with it and sleeping. So there was a maisa that one of the Chashuva Talmidim of the Rav, he got into an argument with the Rav about a certain, in Shir, about a certain issue, and he was holding his own, and the Rav was, so to speak, holding his own as well. But I think that the Rav thought it through. I think you are right. And that was that. And the Shir was basically over, and everybody went his merry way. I had occasion the next morning, before Shir, to speak to the Rav about something, and I knocked on the door, and this is the exact scene. I see it in front of my eyes right now. The Rav opens up the door. I am still outside the apartment. He is inside the apartment, having opened the door. He doesn't say hello. He doesn't say come in. He doesn't even say what do you want. He says, I was right. Now, this isn't a triumph of the Ani, believe me. Totally nothing to do with that at all. You know what it means? What did I see? What did the Talmud see in that moment? I saw a person. What went on in the Rav's mind in those 2 seconds that he opened the door and he looked at me? He says, oh, that's Aaron Kahn, my Talmud from the Shir. That's what he saw. And that's all he needed to see. I don't think if the guard knocked on the door to give him a pair of keys, he would say, I was right. But he saw someone that was coming from the Shir, and immediately the association was, obviously, I'm thinking about the same sugya also. And we're both back in that moment, in that zone. And he's telling me that he thought it over and over and over, and he's convinced now that he was right after all, whatever the issue was. That means that he was thinking about this from the time the Shir was over until the next morning. That's what it means. Does it mean that people weren't calling him or bothering him or asking him for something or other? Does it mean he wasn't relaxing or resting? No, it doesn't mean that at all. It means that there's a chelik of the brain that simply cannot afford to relax because it's tough. And that's the point. And I think he was that way, whether he was in Chaslavich or whether he was in Berlin or whether he was in New York. I don't think it made any difference. And that's a godel b'Torah. You can't stop from holding it near and dear to you. It's like the melech with the Sefer Torah, that it's munachas b'cheiko. But instead of b'cheiko, a physical Sefer Torah is the Torah, and it's in his heart and in his mind. So that's what I see from this niskasha. There are two niskashas in Torah, the sugya at hand and the whole of Torah. And you can worry about how does it look, and you can worry about how you make it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'll give you the picture. If it doesn't work, I'll make it for you. But you have to struggle. You have to be desperate. When you'll be desperate, then I'll give it to you. And it requires your maximum hishtadlus. If the Rambam says, Al ya'abid afilu laila achas b'sheina, the person asks himself, what is the Rambam talking about? What is he talking about? So the teretz is, the Rambam is telling me that Kisra Shel Torah requires a real, genuine Mesiras Nefesh. So Mesiras Nefesh means when I'm tired, I'm going to do it anyhow. Mesiras Nefesh means I have 10 excuses why I shouldn't be learning right now, and I'm not going to pay attention to a single one of them. That's Mesiras Nefesh. One excuse, maybe that's not such a Mesiras Nefesh, because everybody has an excuse. But 10 excuses? You say no. I'm going to the basement. The way I just want to add one thing. When the Rambam says Haschar lefi hatzar, lefum tzara agra, it means something entirely different when it comes to learning than when it comes to mitzvahs in general. And that's exactly why the Rambam mentioned Haschar lefi hatzar in Hilchos Talmud Torah Perigimel and not in Hilchos Deyos or wherever the Rambam talks about mitzvahs in general. Because, as I told you before, the kinyan is not possible except as a pro forma. Like by a Kiddusha Isha, it's pro forma, borrowed from Karka. But she's not Karka. And the reason that it's so, that the image of Kechaloso is by Torah and by Moshe Rabbeinu, is because it's exactly that, that Moshe Rabbeinu on his own could not, even Moshe Rabbeinu and even Bashamayim, could not have accommodated the entire Torah. So in the end, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to give it to him, but it's only after Niskasha Moshe, after the tsar of struggling and trying, and the trials and tribulations of that effort are the material from which you produce the opportunity, the hechetimtza, as we say in the Lomdisha language, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hashpah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will not give the gift until he sees the tzar. That's a tremendous yesod in learning Torah. If it's not a struggle, and if it's not an effort, and if you don't push the extra mile, and if you don't commit yourself to an absolute, which is really heavy, really heavy, Hashem will not give you the rest of it. And without that, the jig is up. There's nothing you can do, because that's the nature of Torah. Once I'm saying this, I might as well repeat what I told this year in the past many times, and I've said it in public many, many times as well. The Pasuk says, Sasa nochi alim rasecha, kemotzei shalol rav. Chafetz Chaim quotes this marshal. In the name of the Vilna Gaon, David HaMelech is mitzvah. He's Arum min HaMitzvahs. So he discovers the Bris Milah, Sasa Nochi Alim Rasecha. The Pashup Shat of Sasa Nochi Alim Rasecha, right? Im Rasecha is Torah. So what is Sasa Nochi Alim Rasecha Kamotze Shalom Rav? You know, what's the Gemara tells us a story about David HaMelech in the Mikveh, in the Merchatz. But what is it in the Pashup Shat? What is exactly, why is it Kamotze Shalom? And why do you use a Lashon of Sasa? Regardless of where else the Vilna Gaon talks about the difference between Sasa and Simcha, maybe in different terms, but in this particular case, the Chafetz Chaim quotes him as saying, Sason is a simcha sheyesh achareha tuga. It's a simcha which results in a measure of sadness and despair. That's a funny kind of simcha. And he says as follows. The mashal of kamotzei shalol rav is a remarkable mashal, he said. Imagine somebody who is conquering the enemy, and the enemy runs for his life and leaves behind tons and tons of spoils of war that they got from others, and the ornaments and jewels that are encrusted in their shields and in their swords and in their horses and whatever. So there's so much to be got to make you rich beyond your wildest imagination. Imagine a person is asked by the king to be the general to lead the people in battle, because he's afraid that otherwise without this general he's going to lose the war and lose his kingdom. So he needs to entice him with something that he would appreciate. So he tells him, you know, that after you'll win, if you do it and you win, and I think you will, then I will allow that only you have access to the spoils of the enemy for an entire day, min ha-boker ad ha-erev. No one else can touch it. It's not going to be a free-for-all. It's not going to the king. It's just going to you. Well, he's very enthused. He imagines his eyes are rolling with all those millions. And he says yes, and he wins. To make a long story short, he takes all of his satchels and his bags and his suitcases and whatever else he can get his hands on. And he goes into the field and he's mamish besimcha atzuma admiod, as he's putting in the golds and the diamonds and the rubies all into these boxes and baskets. But before he knows it, he looks up in the sky and it's already turning dark. Ki yinatu tzlolei erev, as they say. And he looks out upon the field and he sees something that makes him truly depressed. He sees that no matter how much he's managed to acquire, which is going to make him a very wealthy man, not going to have to worry for the rest of his life, but because there's so much more there which could make him fabulously wealthy, maybe more than anyone on earth ever, and he will never be able to access that because the day is almost over, and that was the deal with the king. So the Vilna Gaon says that when you go to Torah and you realize how much there is that you will never be able to accomplish, it's a simcha sheyesh achareha tuga. That's what he says. So sasa nochi alim ratzecha, like the motzei sholol rav who realizes there's so much sholol and I am so limited, I am so finite. So okay, if the finite tries to achieve and acquire the infinite, he'll always have that simcha sheyesh achareha tuga. That's what the Chafetz Chaim says. We might ask a very simple question, like I said before, with the Melitza Maliyu Letzara Hazos. Who wants to engage upon a simcha which is always going to end up in despair at your humanity, at your limitations, at your finiteness? So better to stick to things that are finite, you know. The Super Bowl, you can contain it. You watch it from the beginning till the end, and you've got it in your pocket. And then you have to just chazer it over, so you replay it every couple of years to remember it well. Super Bowl is something I can put in my pocket. Maseches Baba Kama, I can't put into my pocket so easily. Maybe not at all. Simcha Sheyesh Acharei HaTuga. So why not the Super Bowl better? And then you have an intermission. You can take out a beer from the refrigerator. You drink your beer. You sit with your friends. You have yourself a good time. And you watch the game. What do I have to learn Baba Kama for? It's hard. It's demanding. It's grueling. And at times maybe even, I dare not use the word because I really don't mean it, but maybe even for some people boring. But it's a mitzvah. Great mitzvah. But it's Yesh Acharei HaTuga. In the end, there's despair. So why should I engage in it? You know what the answer is? Because it's the only thing that's worthwhile. That's the end. See, for a person to remain with the finiteness and to connect to the finite, it does nothing for him. And it certainly does nothing for his neshama. The neshama is imprisoned in a person who's busy with nonsense. Finiteness is nonsense indeed. That's the way it is. Even chesed has an element of the infinite. I remember when one of the Rosh Yeshiva, an einiko of the Chafetz Chaim, Zichrono Livracha, my Rebbetzin read a shidduch to his son many, many years ago. So he came with a very, very nice shatchan. The halacha, you're supposed to give shatchan, it's money. But he says, this is for the work. But for the shidduch itself, that you are a shutuf with the Rebbeinu Shlom, there's no way that you could pay with material things, because a shidduch is infinite. And that's the way it is. A shidduch is forever. It's this door and the next door, the children and the grandchildren and the great-grandchildren that come from that unique connection of that particular chasna and kala, husband and wife, and all the things they do in their lives, and it just keeps going. Long after we are interred, that you cannot pay for with gashmias of any kind. So when a person does a chesed, it's not measured any longer in material things. And that's why the neshama can sing and breathe. And that's the way it is with all mitzvahs, but particularly with limud ha-Torah. If I am privileged to start collecting these jewels, I cannot say that because in the end there's so much more left that it wasn't a worthwhile endeavor. I cannot say that because there's so much left, it doesn't pay to begin. Because as long as I am involved in collecting the jewels, I have achieved a miracle. The finite is involved with the infinite. And that's all that really matters in the end. To make the finite connected to the infinite. That's Torah, that's Avodah, that's Milas Chasod. It transcends the Bahami. It makes of the person much more than he is or ever could imagine to be. And for that, you don't require that you should be able to go all the way to the last stop on the train. Because the journey on the train is taking you to places and to see things that are unimaginably beautiful and special and great. And that's the point. By the way, parenthetically, I just want you to know that the word of choice by Chasana seems to be also Sasan. Yosis alayich elokoyach kimsos chasan al kala. And Sasan the simcha, even though we say mesameya chasan, Imakala, Mesameach, Chosun, Bekala, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mesameach, but we have Sasam. You know why? The reason is because when you get married, you have these dreams and visions and aspirations of who you're going to be and what you will do as a team, as a union. You listen to Sheva Bracha speeches and you see what people want from you, what they expect of you. It's never going to happen exactly that way. Life has its way of undermining those great visions and those unbelievable dreams. And I heard today, I was at a bris this morning in my shul, and most chassanim or husbands, you know, when their wives give birth, get a little poetic. So he was thanking the Ribbono Shel, he's thanking his parents, you know, but they're, you know, kolo aretz. And then he says, of course, last but not least, I want to thank my Eshes Chayil, but not just for having the baby. He says, ever since I married her, the next day is always better and more wonderful than the day before. That's very impressive. So I told him, I hope he feels that way 10 years from now and 50 years from now. So, and I just heard about somebody that celebrated his 65th wedding anniversary. That's pretty impressive, too. 65 years married together. You know, they didn't exactly get married at the age of two. So there's Cain and Mephlogin, and they had 65 years together. You become one person, really. But when you look back, you know, there are all kinds of moments, and some of them are harsh moments, and some of them are unfulfilled moments, and some of them are moments of genuine frustration and despair. It's not all perfection. You know why? Because we are human. And the dream of a human being is always excessive, is always beyond. Infinite and finite, there has to be a measure of despair. But Shidduchim is infinity. So how does the finite person manage infinity? It's always a simcha sheyesh acharei hatuga. It's sasa. Bris milah is sasa. You know what people, he should grow up with Torah l'chupa l'masin tovim. Everybody wishes he should be a gadol b'Yisrael. You know, he should grow up to be a tzaddik hador, a gadol hador. All right? Those are great dreams. But again, when the finite touches the infinite, it's never perfect. It can't be. So that's why we use a lashon of sasa.